Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Fine Food Friday, November 4th. I'm Ray Graff. Today we will cover pickling and fermentation. Children, sit quietly. We've brought in Chef Rob Handel of the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heather Ridge Farm in Preston Hollow, New York, to walk us through this age-old process. If you've never pickled anything or have been pickled yourself, this is the show for you. If you have a question for Chef Handel, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Pickling, fermentation, your calls. It's coming up on Vox Pop Food Friday right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You know, as winter approaches, many people like to spare themselves from the cold temperatures by staying inside. So when the driveway is shoveled and the house is clean, how else can you spend your time? Well, how about stepping into the kitchen and preserving or converting some of that sustenance you gathered during the summer and fall? I'm talking about pickling and fermentation, of course. New producer. Got to read a script just once. Well, he's like Shakespeare. Chef Rob Handel of the Bee's Knees Cafe at the Heather Ridge Farm in Preston Hollows here. He is the ruler of the kitchen over at the cafe. So let's talk pickling and fermentation today. Give us a call. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org is the email address. My producer, who wrote the script, is not here today. So I'll be watching the email. I'll do the best I can. You know, I have a very minimal level of competence, so I'll do what I can. But the number, if you want to get in on the show, is 800-348-2551. Rob Handel, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Been a while, huh? You were here in the spring? I wasn't here?
Yeah, we were here back in May.
So what's happening out at the farm?
Well, things are starting to wind down a little bit at the farm now. You know, most of our production is in the summer, so now we're starting to settle down and get geared up for our big turkey sale. We raise about 100 large turkeys every year for Thanksgiving, so that's our next big event.
And your farm is, it's livestock?
Yeah, so it's meat and poultry. We raise beef, lamb, goat, pork, chicken, goose, duck, turkey, guinea fowl.
Guinea fowl. Fantastic. Well, you obviously find time to do some pickling. You brought some fine things here today.
Yeah.
And you're an expert on this stuff.
Almost.
So first, before we start, let's read an email that came in from a wiseacre named Jim in Montgomery, who says, can you recommend the best sauce for getting pickled? That's not just so you know, that's not the kind of pickling we're talking about today. What is pickling?
Well, you know, the thing about pickling is that there's a more traditional way of pickling and a more contemporary way of pickling, and that makes it a little bit difficult with the nomenclature. So the traditional definition of pickling was fermented pickles, where you're adding salt to the vegetables and you're allowing bacteria that's naturally on the vegetables to convert the sugars in the vegetables into lactic acid.
Right.
The more contemporary way of pickling is vinegar pickling, where you're buying the acid already prepared in a bottle and you're introducing that to the vegetables. You know, hundreds of years ago, in order to get the vinegar, you would have to create alcohol first, which required either fruit or sugar or,
right,
you know, valuable resources, and then you would have to allow it to sour. So it was a lot harder to make a vinegar pickle 200 years ago. These days, that's kind of flip-flopped. You know, it's very easy to get vinegar.
So nowadays, you will buy the vinegar and do it yourself?
Many people do. I still do mostly lacto-fermented pickles, which is the more traditional way. With salt, yeah.
Take us through that process.
So the whole concept of the lacto-fermented pickles is that the salt makes a barrier for bacteria that we don't want in the pickles, stuff that'll make them taste bad or might make you sick.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certain types of bacteria called lactobacilli that prefer the salt. And putting them in that saline environment allows that bacteria to flourish, and that bacteria develops the lactic acid. And that's where the tartness in the pickle comes from. So the flavor is a little different than the vinegar pickle. It's kind of a milder acid. It's not as harsh as the acetic acid in the vinegar. And the pickles stay crunchier because they aren't exposed to heat. And along with that, there's quite a few probiotic benefits for people who are interested in adding probiotics to their diets.
And that is a longer process?
Yeah, whereas the vinegar pickles only take, a quick pickle can only take a few minutes of simmering a vegetable in vinegar. The lacto-fermented pickles take anywhere from a week to a month.
The pickles you find on your grocery store shelves are not the way you do it.
Yeah, those are by and large vinegar-based pickles, and they're sterilized and heated in the jars in order to make those jars shelf stable. Some stores, I'm sure, someplace like Honest Weight in the refrigerator section may have fermented pickles, but the standard, you know, dill pickles on the shelf.
And then you do fermentation as well? You do sauerkraut and whatnot?
Yeah. So the pickling is one form of fermentation, but then there's all sorts of other forms of fermentation using different kinds of bacteria, different kinds of fungi like yeasts or different kinds of molds that we want to encourage. So people don't think about it, but there's a huge range of products that we consume on a regular basis that have been fermented in one way or another.
You mentioned mold, and first response most people have is, oh, no.
Yeah.
You don't want moldy food. How do you learn what is good mold and what is bad mold? Obviously, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, well, you know, there's different rules based on what product you're making. In some cases, these days, in most cases, you're actually adding a mold culture. So you're buying a product from, you know, one of several companies that produces this, and it has the spores for the kind of mold that you want growing on the food. So if you're making cheese, if you're making salamis that have a mold bloom on them, things like that, you can actually buy this powdered mold spores, and you can inoculate your product with that so that the right mold will grow.
Mm. Our guest today is Chef Rob Handel. It is a Food Friday. Chef Handel is with Bee's Knees Cafe. He is also an expert on pickling and fermentation, and that's what we're talking about on the show today. Let's go over to Laura in Sunderland. Laura, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thank you for the show.
You bet. This
is great. I live in Western Mass. We have amazing cabbage. And so I've been trying to make sauerkraut and actually have just bought a traditional crock for it. But my main question is the quantity of salt per pound of cabbage. My first batch seemed very salty, and I've read and read and can't really determine what the best ratio would be.
So there's actually a really simple way to make it so that your sauerkraut comes out uniform with the perfect amount of salt every time. A lot of the traditional recipes call for volume measurements. They'll say, you know, for 10 pounds of cabbage, use one tablespoon of salt or something like that. But what I do is I weigh the cabbage, and then I calculate the amount of salt based on the weight of the cabbage. And I usually use 2.5% salt. So if you have a small...
2.5, say that again.
2.5% salt. So if you have a small digital kitchen scale, you know, they range from $10 to $20 at cooking stores, Walmart, something like that. You can weigh the cabbage. I prefer to weigh it in grams because you don't have to convert between pounds and ounces in that case. And
yep.
I shred up all of my cabbage. I weigh the cabbage. And then you multiply that weight by 0.025. And that's 2.5%. And then you take that number and you weigh out that amount of salt and add it to the cabbage. And for most people, 2.5% is really the sweet spot where it's not too salty, but there's enough salt in there to have the right flavor and to protect against bad bacteria from spoiling the batch.
Do you put spices? I mean, what other additives in sauerkraut? Onions or seeds? Is there anything you think is best?
Yeah, you can do all sorts of different things with it. One of the traditional things to add is caraway seed. You can add apples and caraway seed. You can add onions. You can add shredded up carrots. You can add shredded up beets if you want to make it this nice red color. The one thing I would advise to do is whatever you're adding, it should be shredded similar to the cabbages. If you have large...
So even apples you would shred...
Even apples I would shred. The apples are a little softer and they'll break down faster, but you don't want to tuck in big chunks of beets because your sauerkraut will be finished fermenting and the beets will still be on their way.
Yeah.
Well, before you end the show, and I'm going to stop talking now, but I hope you will speak about mead.
Yes, actually brought some cherry mead in for Ray to try.
Oh, fantastic. Well,
Ray.
All right.
You.
Well, thanks, Laura. We appreciate it. Thanks for bringing that up. Here's an email that came in, Rob. This is from Kelly in Shady, New York. Says, curious about a recipe for lacto-fermenting whole garlic cloves, say in a 2-cup mason jar.
Yeah, sure. So the process for something like that is really simple. If you want to do it in the mason jar, One of the byproducts of a lot of this kind of fermentation is CO2, which is a gas.
Right.
So you don't want to do it in a container that's sealed, because what will end up happening is you can explode that container.
It's very exciting, though.
Well, it's not so exciting when you come home and your whole house smells like fermenting garlic and there's shards of glass everywhere.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a normal weekend at my house, but all right.
So they make something called an airlock, and it's basically an S-shaped tube that you put water in. And the water allows the gas to bubble out, and it doesn't allow any other bacteria to get into the jar and contaminate the batch. So they make different mason jar-specific lids for this. If you go on Amazon or any of the fermenting websites, you'll see all sorts of stuff. And they carry the airlocks at the homebrew store in Rensselaer. There's a homebrew supply place there. So you would take your garlic cloves, peel them, put them in your 2-cup mason jar, and then add a brine. The brine that I usually use is a cup of kosher salt. I use Diamond brand because it doesn't have any additives mm-hmm. to it. Some of the other brands have additives that'll make it look a little funny. And I add 1 cup of Diamond brand kosher salt to every gallon of water.
Hmm.
So for a 2-cup jar, if you're only looking for a cup of brine, that's a 16th of a cup, which is half an ounce.
Right.
And then you just mix the salt and the water together, pour it over the garlic cloves, and fit the airlock on. You do want to make sure the garlic stays submerged, because if any of the garlic is above the level of the brine, it can start to mold.
Makes sense.
Exactly.
So I don't know if I've ever had fermented garlic. Have I?
You may not have.
Sounds good.
It is good. It's really good. And what I do is I add garlic to my fermented pickles, of course. And I serve the pickles at the cafe with sandwiches, but I always save all of the garlic cloves at the end of it. I don't throw them out because they're great to chop up and add to different soups or sauces or all sorts of different things.
Perfect. Chef Rob Handel is our guest today. We talk pickling and fermentation here on a Vox Pop Food Friday. And the number is 800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from John Andrews Farmhouse Restaurant. Inspired by international flavors and seasonal ingredients sourced from local farms and food makers, John Andrews is just over the New York-Berkshire's border in Egremont, Massachusetts. JohnAndrewsRestaurant.com. Kern Compliance Services Incorporated, Greenwich, New York, and Mendota Heights, Minnesota. Serving life insurance carriers and their distribution partners, offering DOL fiduciary rule compliance training. KernCompliance.com. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, Sheffield, Massachusetts. Handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, peppers, and blends, specializing in garlic and hot pepper blends. RollingRockSalt.com for events and details. Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, Old South Street, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Dairy and No Moon Dairy Free. Handmade artisan ice cream, sweet baked goods, hot fudge, and more. Harold's.com. And Roundhouse Bakery, Cambridge, New York. Featuring baked goods along with coffee, teas, soups, and sandwiches using locally sourced and organic as available produce and ingredients. RoundhouseBakery.blogspot.in.
Welcome back to the program. It is Vox Pop. It is Food Friday. It is Ray Graff here at the helm and joined today by Chef Rob Handel of the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heather Ridge Farm in lovely Preston Hollow. He is the ruler of the kitchen over there. Our number is 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. We talk pickling and fermentation, and then he brought drinks. What'd you bring?
So one of the things I brought was a little cherry mead, and one of the previous callers had asked about mead. So whenever you're making alcohol, you need some kind of sugar for the yeast to turn into alcohol.
Sure.
And all mead is alcohol that's made using honey as the primary sugar. So this one has honey and also some local cherries that I picked and
this
a couple other things.
This smells delicious. All right. Salut. Here we go. Oh, that's great. It is not too sweet. One of my complaints about mead is sometimes it'll hit you over the head with the sweetness. That is dry. It's lovely.
Well, I think some of the mead producers think that people buying something honey-based want to taste the honey.
Yeah.
And that's not always the case. So, you know, I let this one get a little bit drier.
Oh, that's great. I think that'd be a good breakfast drink. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Rob Handel is our guest. Let's go to Cheryl and Troy. Cheryl, you're on.
Hi, Rob and Chef, Chef Rob and Ray.
Hello.
I look forward to Food Friday every week. It's my favorite Vox Pop.
Well, thank you.
I had a question about pickling beets. Is there any kind of preparing that you should do beforehand? And I also had a question about flavors. I just got into vinegar pickling this summer, and I was curious about other kinds of spices and herbs you could put in with pickles.
Sure. So you're interested in making vinegar pickled beets?
Yes.
Okay. So the process is pretty simple. What I do is I like to cook the beets before I peel them, because once you cook them, the skin slip off very easily. So I just wash the beets, put the whole beets in a big pot of water, put them on the stove. Usually, if you're going to just eat the beets, then you'd cook them until they were fairly tender. I like to stop them when they're still just a little firm inside, because if you're going to be canning them after you pickle them, you're going to be cooking them some more, and you don't want them to get too soft. Once you can pierce them with a knife, you can shock them in some cold water, and the skins just slip right off. You know, just with your fingers, you can rub them off. And at that point, you can slice them up, and there's all sorts of recipes online. I don't have a proportion in my head for the amount of vinegar to salt, but typically, a standard brine is a certain quantity of vinegar, a little bit of water to cut the acid back a little bit, and then some salt. In the case of pickled beets, usually some warm spices are added, like clove, cinnamon, allspice, some star anise maybe, and usually a little bit of sweetener. You know, you can add some.
Aren't they sweet on their own?
They're sweet on their own, but often the sweetness is accentuated by a little bit of sugar. You could add a little bit of some other kind of sweetener, like honey or maple syrup or something like that.
Hmm.
And you can also play with the different vinegars. You know, the recipe may call for white vinegar, but as long as you look on the bottle and make sure it has the same percent acid, you could use red wine vinegar, you could use rice wine vinegar, apple cider vinegar, all sorts of different things like that.
Fantastic.
Well, thanks, Cheryl. We appreciate the call. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye. Have a good weekend. 800-348-2551. How long will it take to pickle beets?
If you're doing the vinegar method like we just talked about, you could have them done within an hour or so.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it's best whenever you do something like that, it's best to let it sit for a little while in the jar for those flavors to meld. But, you know, you can consume them immediately. They're better after a week or two.
And after you open the jar, I assume you can keep them in sealed in the jar for a long period of time. But after you open them, how long can you keep them
in the
fridge?
Yeah, you can keep, as long as you boiled them in a water bath and you actually canned them, you can keep them for a long time. Once they've been opened, you know, they'll easily last 2 or 3 weeks in the refrigerator, and that's a conservative estimate.
All right.
Yeah.
Our guest is Rob Handel of Bee's Knees Cafe at the Heather Ridge Farm in Preston Hollow. 800-348-2551. Adrian in New Paltz. Adrian, you're on.
Hey, Ray, let's go historical. I bet your guest has something to say about pickled pig's feet.
Oh,
that's an old, old culinary term. And another one is, I'm in a pickle. I'll let you go. Comment on those two historical terms. Have a great weekend, both of you.
All right, man. We got an email earlier about pickled pig's feet, so you might as well have at it.
Well, you know, honestly, I don't do a lot of pickled pig's feet because I have...
not much call for it anymore,
is
there?
There's not much call for it, and I think they're better used in a stock or something like that. But certainly doing something like that, the pig's feet, head cheese, you know, the British call head cheese brawn, which is a little bit of a nicer name for it. Head cheese sounds kind of grim.
Absolutely, and
but,
it is.
There are all ways of preserving the meat, and that's how all of this fermentation really started hundreds, if not thousands of years ago, whereas preservation methods. So I don't do a lot of pickled pig's feet.
How about
though.
Pickled eggs?
I do plenty of pickled eggs in the spring, yeah.
Pickled eggs are great.
Oh, they are great. And what I usually do is I pickle them, and then I serve them on salads and things like that. One of the things that I learned that was kind of interesting, I wanted to make the pink pickled eggs that you see, which is usually made using beets.
Right.
And, you know, you add beets, and then they're this brilliant pink on the outside. And I didn't have any beets, but I had some hibiscus flowers, which have a similar kind of red, you know, really vibrant color. So I made the brine with some of the hibiscus, and they turned this really beautiful shade of a purple, you know, kind of a mauve almost. It was a lot more natural looking than the beet color.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been my go-to red pickled egg is now the hibiscus pickled eggs.
Now, nowadays, are people somewhat reluctant to try that? In the old days, when I was a young man, all the bars had pickled eggs.
Yeah, you know, and I think that that image comes to a lot of people's mind, you know, the bartender reaching his bare hand into the pickle jar
sure,
up to his elbow
not?
And grabbing
yeah.
out an egg. Sometimes I call them marinated eggs because that sounds a little more genteel than pickled eggs. But I find that whenever people do try them, they really enjoy them.
I do not like green eggs and ham. Let's go to Jim in Adams. Jim, you're on.
Yeah, hi. About a month ago or so, you had a lady on that was pickling her, fermenting her own cabbage.
Correct.
And she was saying the ratio she used, and I tried it and it worked well, is 5 pounds of shredded cabbage to 3 tablespoons of fine sea salt.
All right. And you would you like Chef Handel to comment on that?
No, I just was wondering if that was okay to use. I tried it. It came out good. I know there was a lady that called a little while ago and was wondering about the ratio.
Well, you know, the thing about that is I'm sure that that works out fine, but salt comes in different size grains, and, you know, there's could be more or less salt in a tablespoon based on how large the grains are.
Sure.
The other perspective on that is it's rare that you find a cabbage that weighs exactly 5 pounds. If you're weighing the cabbage and then calculating the weight of the salt, it doesn't matter how much cabbage you have. You know, if you end up with a cabbage that weighs 4.5 pounds, you can do that really simple calculation and still hit the salt dead on. So you don't have to have leftover cabbage or not enough cabbage or something like that.
Mm.
I make sauerkraut in 5-gallon buckets, you know, so I make 30 pounds at a time. And being able to just weigh it and calculate the salt really quick is a benefit for me.
Great. Sounds good. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. I would assume that if you err on the side of too much salt, it's okay.
It's okay from a safety perspective, but it may not be as edible.
Well, some people love, I like a little extra salt.
A lot of people do like extra salt. And if your sauerkraut comes out a little too salty, you can rinse it to get some of that brine away and try to mellow it out, or you can use it as an ingredient. So, you know, not all of these fermented things need to be consumed by themselves. A lot of them are great to think of them as ingredients.
Right.
Where, you know, you might add some of that sauerkraut to a soup, something like borscht, instead of adding fresh cabbage.
So the fermented garlic, for instance.
Exactly, yeah.
Our guest today is Chef Rob Handel of the Bee's Knees Cafe. It's a Food Friday. We talk pickling and fermentation. Number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Rex in Schenectady. Rex, you're on.
Hello. Can you reuse the vinegar after you're done pickling?
Good question.
I would not reuse the vinegar if you're looking to make canned pickles that you want to be shelf stable. The acidity in there is really important, and some of that vinegar has gotten into the vegetables, and it may mess up the pH. What you can do is you can make what's called a refrigerator pickle using the leftover brine. And that's just where you quickly simmer the vegetables in the brine and then keep them in the refrigerator and eat them within a couple of weeks. And in that case, the acidity isn't so much of a concern. I do reuse pickle brine for other things. You know, especially the lacto-fermented brine more than the vinegar brine, I'll brine meat in that.
Oh.
And it's a great way to brine pork or beef or something like that. There's a traditional Polish pickle soup where you can use some of the brine in there.
Will it keep long enough to use down the road? I mean, long will it keep?
In the refrigerator, the brine will keep for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly.
All right, Rex.
All right, thank you.
Okay, a satisfied customer. 800-348-2551. Walter in Rosendale. Walter, you're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I have another sauerkraut question.
Fantastic.
I've made sauerkraut before, and every now and then you get mold on top of it, like a greenish blue or grayish greenish mold on top of it, and I just get rid of it and let it keep going. Is that all right, or should I be leery of this mold?
Mold is scary stuff, right?
Well, there's different theories on that, and it's hard to get a consensus. For my personal use at home, I skim the mold off and make sure I get well below it, and I eat it. I don't mind that. at Heather Ridge, if anything gets moldy, I throw the whole batch out.
Right.
But if you do the research on that, there's really no definitive answer. Certainly the anecdotal kind of folk method would indicate that scraping the mold off is fine. Typically, something like white mold is fairly innocuous. If you get into a black mold or something like that, or some kind of really crazy colored mold, then you would certainly want to get rid of the whole batch.
Yeah. And this is basically just you know, like a blue cheese looking color mold.
Yeah. The best thing to do is to try to prevent the mold altogether. And the easiest way to do that is to make sure the sauerkraut is completely submerged in the brine. And all of this mold needs oxygen to grow. So if you have, if the sauerkraut doesn't develop enough brine of its own, for people who haven't made sauerkraut, the basic premise is that the salt draws out the water in the cabbage and it creates its own brine. If there's not enough water in your cabbage and it's a little dry on top, you can add some extra brine, you know, just weigh out the water, add the 2.5% salt, and just keep it submerged. And, you know, I've never had a batch that's been properly submerged go moldy. So prevention is really the best method.
Walter, thank you so much for the call. This email came in from Emily, who says, to the woman who asked about flavoring kraut, here are some ideas I got from a German chef on Food Friday. That goes way back. To 1.5 pounds of shredded cabbage, add 2 tablespoons of white wine, 4 minced cloves of garlic, 1 tablespoon of dill seeds removed from stems. She uses 2 teaspoons of pure salt, such as kosher salt or sea salt, per pound of shredded veggies. And pack tightly into clean mason jars, ferment at between 60 and 70 degrees. Put the lids on barely tightened, she says, so some juice can be forced out during fermentation. The kraut is wonderful. Any comments on that, Rob?
That's certainly a method that people use. I prefer to use the airlock. It's a little more fail-safe than just barely tightening the lids, but those seasonings sound great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Chef Rob Handel. It is a Food Friday. We talk pickling and fermentation. Our number here is 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Alan in Duanesburg is next. Alan.
Yeah, I make sauerkraut and brine pickles, and I've had a lot of real good success. I've also had some failures where it just seemed to get mushy rather than crisp. But my other question is, in the fridge, I thought they would keep for like a couple of months, and it gets moldy in there. The pickles, again, decompose. They get very soft. So is there something I can do differently, or do I just need to eat them faster?
No, they should last for really quite a long time in the fridge. One of the things I brought here for Ray to try is a carrot kraut.
Ooh.
And it's kind of a spicy carrot kraut. And I made this. This is coming up on its third birthday, actually.
Oh, it smells
so
great.
I made this 3 years ago, and it's still...
This is 3 years old.
It's 3 years
I'm about
old,
to eat.
But you're about to eat.
Should I eat it right from the jar?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, man.
It's perfectly edible. It's delicious. As far as the pickles getting soft, one thing that you can do is make sure you add something that has tannins, grape leaves, any kind
of... they're good when I take them out.
Okay.
When I'm done, but when I put them in the fridge and they get soft in the fridge, I don't keep the grape leaves in the jar in the fridge. I just put them in the brine.
And are they completely covered in brine?
You know, pretty much there's a little gap at the top where,
the problem. They really need to be covered. And it's tough because they wanna float. But if any of them are above the brine, that's when you'll start to get those problems.
There you go.
Even in the fridge?
Even in the fridge.
Oh, okay.
Last for a week or two in the fridge uncovered. But if you want to store them in the fridge until next summer, you really need to keep them covered.
So do you fill the jar? I put them in jars in the fridge right to the top?
Is if you use the regular size, the mason jars with the regular size mouth, they have kind of a shoulder. You can pack the pickles in there really tightly so that the shoulder keeps them from coming up to the top. And then you can just top it off with the brine.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. Yeah, because in the crock, I have a plate that holds them down, and that works good with the...
Eventually they will soften. No matter what you do, at, like, you know, by 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, they'll start to soften a little bit, but they shouldn't get moldy, and they should stay crisp for a couple months at least.
All right, Alan, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. So that carrot kraut is 3 years old.
It is.
It's really good, man.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So you can see how effective these kind of preservation techniques are.
Now, will I die before the end of the show?
No, no. I ate a big bowl last night, and I'm still fine.
Really? Yeah, you seem relatively alive. So what's in that? Now, caraway seeds, maybe?
There's actually, I don't know what's in the spice blend. A friend of mine had given me this Syrian spice blend. So
it's got a little zing to it.
Yeah, I added a little bit of hot pepper, the Syrian spice blend, salt, and that's it.
It's really
so
good.
So there's no other preservatives in there. It's just the acid from the bacteria and the salt preserving it.
You know, I think I prefer the texture of that to cabbage kraut.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really nice and probably good for you in some way,
it's
right?
It's very good for you, yeah.
Well, we'll have to stop that. This one came in via email before we take our next break, and it has things I can't say. So I'll just read it and I'll make mistakes. This is from Chris in Grafton, who says, I just recently discovered homemade kimchi and homemade kombucha tea, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Do you make either, and how do you prefer making your kimchi, and how do you make your own SCOBY, and what recipe do you follow? What the hell is SCOBY, first of all?
Well, I knew this question would come up.
Okay.
People are coming into me at the cafe asking me to troubleshoot their kombucha and water kefir and stuff like that all the time.
Yeah.
So as far as the kimchi goes, most people are familiar with kimchi, but it's a Korean fermented cabbage.
Yeah.
Yeah. The traditional way that it was made was you would brine the cabbage for a few hours or overnight in a saltwater brine. Then you would remove it, rub it with a really spicy Korean pepper paste, and then pack it into jars with other vegetables and ferment it.
And bury it out in the field.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
The way I do it, it's a way that a guy named Sander Katz recommends, and he's kind of the American fermentation guru.
Okay. And, I didn't know there was one. That's,
yeah.
That's great.
Believe it or not.
Okay.
And he calls it krautchi. And
okay.
the premise is that you treat it the same way as sauerkraut, where you weigh out the vegetables and you just add the salt directly without brining it and removing it from the brine. And for me, that's easier because it's fewer steps. You can do everything all at once and not stretch the project out over the course of days. So that's how I do the kimchi. As far as the seasonings go, you can do all sorts of different things. Ginger, scallions are traditional ingredients, some kind of hot pepper. As far as the kombucha goes, the kombucha is really interesting because it uses two different kinds of microbes, organisms in there to ferment it. So what it is it's a tea, and you make the tea like you would make standard black tea.
Yeah.
You add the sugar to it, and then the SCOBY that was mentioned in the email.
Isn't that smokeless tobacco? No.
It's an acronym that stands for a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast.
My second guess.
That was your second guess, yeah. So what it is, it's kind of it looks really horrid, and it really turns people off when they see it. It's kind of this gelatinous mass that floats on the top of the tea.
Mm.
And some people call it a kombucha mushroom or a kombucha mother, but it's kind of this polysaccharide mass that the bacteria creates and builds.
Oh, sounds appetizing.
And what you do is you slip it into the tea, and what happens is the yeast turns the sugar in the tea into alcohol, and as that's happening, the bacteria converts the alcohol into acetic acid, which is the same acid found in vinegar. So the final product has a very, very, very small amount of alcohol, you know, 1% or less. But it's this kind of sour, you can carbonate it, so this kind of sour, effervescent tea. And it has a lot of different health benefits. The bacteria and the yeast turn the sugars into all sorts of different amino acids and beta-glucans and things like that. If you want to make your own, what you can do is you can either source a mother from somebody, a SCOBY from somebody else, or you can actually take a bottle of prepared kombucha that you can buy in the store, as long as it says it has live active cultures in it,
right.
And you can add that to the tea and allow a SCOBY to grow from that.
Okay, this is like alchemy. We have to take a break here. Our guest is Chef Rob Handel. We'll talk more about the mother of all teas coming up on Vox Pop Food Friday.
Support for WAMC comes from Elements Hot Tub Spa, downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, offering hot tubs in 5 indoor or outdoor private rooms, plus a team of massage therapists for individuals and couples. ElementsHotTubSpa.com for gift certificates and photo gallery. The Cheryl R. Lindenbaum Comprehensive Cancer Center at New York Presbyterian Hudson Valley Hospital. NewYorkPresbyterian.org/Hudson Valley to learn more. River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Shunpike Dairy, Millbrook, raw milk from antibiotic and hormone-free cows on a family farm. Tours anytime on a working dairy, open 7 days, shunpikedairy.com. And Blue Heron Restaurant and Catering, now booking holiday parties at the restaurant in Sunderland and throughout Western Massachusetts. BlueHeronDining.com/catering.
It's Vox Pop Food Friday on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number is 800-348-2551. We're joined today by Chef Rob Handel of Bee's Knees Cafe at the Heather Ridge Farm in Preston Hollow. We're learning all about pickling and fermentation today, and you actually teach courses in this.
Yeah. I have a couple classes that I'm going to be teaching over the next few months. One is just a short kind of introduction to fermentation. It's just a few-hour class, and that one's scheduled for January 7th. And then I'm also planning a whole weekend-long fermentation intensive where we'll cover a pretty broad range of fermented products and how you make them, how you use them, that kind of thing. And that's scheduled for March 3rd through 5th.
Okay. And how do we find out more about that?
If you go to our website, which is www.heather-ridge-farm.com, you'll be able to get more information on
that. So heather-ridge-farm.com.
Yes.
Fair enough. All right, so what am I about to drink here? It smells delicious.
So what you're about to drink, it's a black cap lambic. So a lambic is a Belgian-style beer. It often has fruit in it, not always. And they're fermented with natural wild yeasts. So typically you're starting with a sterile environment and you're adding a commercially produced yeast. In this case, most fruit is covered in wild yeasts. If you've ever seen grapes have that kind of powdery looking film on the outside, that's actually wild yeast growing on the grapes. And the black cap raspberries, which are these wild black raspberries that grow all over the place in the summer, have that same yeast. So what I did was I made an herbal beer base. So there's no grain in it. It's just different wild herbs that when you ferment them, they give this beer-like characteristic.
Amazing.
And then I added the black cap raspberries to provide the yeast and some color and flavor.
And how long did you brew this?
I brewed this in the beginning of July.
All right, let's give it a shot. Salute. Well, I'll be darned.
So that sour flavor in there, that comes from... along with the yeast on the berries, there's other bacteria and different yeasts. And so that's where that kind of tart, sour flavor comes from.
Oh, I love that. You don't know the alcohol content?
Fairly light, I
would assume.
It is pretty light, yes.
All right, let's go to Amelia in Great Barrington. Amelia, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hi. I wanted to know what pickled eggs were because I do not know what pickled eggs are.
Oh, are you in for a treat?
So pickled eggs are just hard-boiled eggs. You know, you cook the eggs, you peel them, and then you put them into a vinegar brine, and you let them sit for a couple of weeks. And the vinegar, it helps to preserve them. You know, they can last for quite a while in there, but it also gives them a flavor, like a pickled flavor.
Delicious.
So they were traditionally used as a bar snack because they were salty and sour, and when you ate one, you'd want to order another drink, and they would last sitting on a bar for, you know, years at a shot.
So. Now, there is a drawback, Amelia, because three or four pickled eggs, three or four beers, it's a combination that, just say you need some air afterwards. You need to be out in the open.
Uh-huh.
But it's very good stuff. You'll enjoy a pickled egg.
Oh, well, I actually did not hear about that until this show. And I was very curious, so.
Well, they're very, very easy to make.
I love Vox Pop, especially Food Friday.
Well, you're very kind. Well, thank you, Amelia. We appreciate it. Have a lovely weekend. Mark in Springfield. Mark, you're on.
Yeah, I'm in my second year on making fermented hot sauce.
Cool.
And I've just used some poblanos that ripen to red and some other red chilies. And I ground it up and I added a little salt and a little garlic. And I did the whole, I kind of stirred it every day for 2 weeks or so. And then I did the cheesecloth and extracted it. And I guess my question is this. I love it because I made it, but not everyone else loves it. And I'm wondering how can you enhance the flavor of your own hot sauce like that?
Well, the people who don't love it, did they tell you why they don't love it?
I think part of it is it doesn't quite have that. It has that sort of composty smell, that fermentation, like in the fall that you smell, like around the garden or whatnot. I think that's kind of what it is. It has a little bit of that flavor in it.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure how much salt you use, but I usually use a little more salt when you're fermenting peppers because they have a tendency to mold a little more. My hot sauce recipe is similar. The poblanos, you might want to use a different pepper other than poblanos. They're really kind of a mild pepper, even if you let them redden and ripen. What the local farms around me grow that I typically use are a mixture of Hungarian wax peppers. They have these long Portuguese peppers, maybe some Anaheim chilies that they'll let get red. So I did a kind of a smoky poblano sauce last year, and it didn't seem to hold up as well as the other hot sauce did. So you might want to change your pepper. I usually just use the peppers, the garlic, and the salt also. I don't go crazy with it. You might want to add just a splash of vinegar to it when it's done, after you've extracted it and pressed it through the cheesecloth. So those are some ideas.
So, okay, and a little more salt may help out with the
The
moldy sort of smell. Okay. Yeah. Rob Handel is our guest, 800-348-2551. Neil in Pine Bush is next. Neil, you're on.
Hi. I actually have some questions about pickled eggs. I didn't tune in until a little bit later, so I missed if you were talking about them. My dad made them when I was a kid, and the flavor was just so strong. I tried to make them recently. I let them sit in a vinegar, sugar, salt, garlic, dill brine for about a week. It seemed like it was just barely flavorful. When you ate the egg, so I don't know if I'm doing something wrong, if they have to sit longer or...
Yeah, ideally, I like to let them sit for 2 weeks in that brine. Did you make enough that you were able to try some more at a later date?
I did. I tried a week. Second one I tried almost 3 weeks. And to me, it didn't penetrate the egg at all. And I didn't know if that was just...
Well, what you could try is...
I barely remember as a kid.
Uh-huh. What you could try is you can always increase the vinegar. You don't want to decrease it too much because it is acting as a preservative. But if you want an egg that's a little tartar and kind of more assertive, you can add more vinegar and less water. So, you might want to start with... if the recipe is one cup water and 3 cups vinegar, maybe you do, 3/4 of a cup water and, increase the vinegar proportionately.
There you go.
Okay. All right. I'll try more vinegar.
Yeah. Maybe add some more dill, some more garlic.
Say it again, Neil.
Will that make it rubbery?
No, that shouldn't make it rubbery. No. And you might also try adding some more garlic. Maybe slice the garlic so that there's more garlic exposed in there and it's not a whole clove.
So more surface area.
Something like that. Yeah. Are you simmering the brine before you put the eggs in it?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I bring it to a boil enough to dilute everything. And then I would put in, nobody likes me after I eat them because I have 6 whole cloves of garlic.
Nice.
But I wonder, would it make a difference if I chopped them up?
You could certainly try that. That's the kind of thing that that's fun to play around with. But it sounds like you're on the right track. Just try tweaking the proportions a little bit until you get to someplace that you like.
Yeah. What's the standard proportion? I'm just curious because I used 1 cup water to 2 cups vinegar. So
is that too little of vinegar? I mean, you said increase it, but don't lower it, so.
Yeah, I don't remember off the top of my head. That sounds like it could be about right, okay. But I don't remember.
Okay, well, Neil, thanks a lot for that call. 800-348-2551. Chef Rob Handel is our guest on this pickling and fermentation edition of Vox Pop Food Friday. What about pickling like sausage or meat?
You know, I don't do a lot of meat pickling. I do ferment meat, but what I do is I make different kinds of salamis. Mm. So that's where you would take the meat, the sausage, and you actually let it sit at a kind of warm temperature, room temperature or higher, and you add a bacteria culture to there and let it ferment. And then you air dry it. So it never gets cooked. You just kind of dry
it. Isn't that dangerous, though, from a health standpoint?
It's not, because you add you know, in the health, in the food safety field, they call them hurdles. You add different things to prevent bacterial growth. So, you know, nitrates, which people get down on, but yep. You add nitrates to them. You add a certain amount of salt level. And then what the bacteria does while it's fermenting is it actually does make it tart. It drops the pH and makes it acidic. And that's a big hurdle for spoilage bacteria.
Understood. Let's go back to the phones. And Lois in Delmar is next. Lois.
Hi there. Hey. I was in my car when I turned you on, and you were in the middle of a beet conversation. I love my beet recipe, and this might be just exactly what he gave, but I cut the beets more. I'm more likely to cut them in little squares instead of slices, and then you can stab them with your fork, and they're very easy to eat. But it calls for a quarter cup of water to a third cup of vinegar, a fourth cup of sugar, and a half a teaspoon of cinnamon, and a quarter teaspoon of salt. The recipe also calls for clove, but I don't use it. And I love the beets, the way they come out. And I bring that to a boil, that mixture to a boil, and then have the cut-up cooked beets, put them in there, and just simmer it for 5 minutes covered. Does that sound about the way you were saying?
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, thank you for sharing that recipe.
And I doubled the recipe usually because I don't have exactly 2 cups of beets, and I want to make sure that I have plenty of juice for each of the jars that I put the beets into. Mm-hmm. So I don't can them, per se. I just put them in the jar and keep them in the refrigerator.
Yeah, that's fine. That's, you know, that's called a refrigerator pickle, and that's
how
fine.
Long can they keep when they're like that, if they've already been brought to a boil once?
They usually last for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks like that, at least. You really just have to look at them and make sure they're not moldy and they don't smell bad.
Huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks,
well,
Lois.
I love your program. It's very interesting. Thank you.
We appreciate the call. And over to Rita in Ackard. Rita, are you the same Rita who wrote me an email about mead?
Yes, I am.
Well,
I wasn't sure if I'd get in before the program went off.
You're on.
All right. Just hoping that your guest could talk about mead a little bit more, maybe a recipe. And while I was on the phone, I missed the other Lambert or something.
Lambic.
Lambic, yeah. If he could go over that again, I'd appreciate it.
Sure thing. Hang in there, Rita.
Sure. So I don't have a mead recipe with me. You know, a lot of these recipes, I have a book at home where I keep notes.
How about online? Or do you have a website or something?
There are tons of mead recipes. I don't have a specific website that I could recommend for mead specifically. But it can be as simple as just honey, water, and yeast. Usually some people add, like, you know, some lemon or something like that. Or you can do fruit meads, which are actually called mellow mels. The technical term for that is a mellow mel, not a mead if you add fruit. But the procedure is very simple. You add the honey to the water, you bring it up to a boil, you let it cool, you add the yeast, and then you let it ferment. So the procedure is simple. You can find a lot more information online.
Sure. How much time is involved?
It really depends. Each ferment is a little bit different. The cherry mead that I brought in here, the cherry mellow mel,
I think that one
took 3 or 4 weeks before it stopped fermenting. Sometimes it takes a very long time. Other times it's done in a week. So.
Okay.
And then, really good. And then you would age it. You know, you would age it after it's done fermenting. So this one I made in, I think, July when the cherries were ripe.
And what do you bottle it in?
You can use everything from beer bottles with the crown caps. You can purchase tools for putting the crown caps on, or you can use the flipped cap style Grolsch bottles, something like that.
Yeah.
If you're not going to carbonate it, if you're going to leave it still, which most people do, you can bottle it in wine bottles with corks.
All right. Rita, we have to end it there. Rob Handel, once again, if people want more information on your fermentation classes or anything else, what is the website address?
The website is www.heather-ridge-farm.com.
Heather-ridge-farm.com. And you'll find out more. Now, your next intensive class, you said, is in March.
Yeah, so we're planning a weekend-long fermentation intensive from March 3rd to 5th. And if you're looking to kind of just get your toes in the water, a little commitment in the or the vinegar, we're doing a class on January 7th that'll just be a couple hours long.
Well, who knew how interesting this could be?
And it's a big, wide world out there.
Well, thanks, man. We appreciate you being here. Support comes from Crown Maple Syrup, Hudson Valley Cafe, open every weekend for lunch, drinks by the patio, fire, fall, foliage, maple tours, and special events. CrownMaple.com for details. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tasting Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. Pekarsky's, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, family-owned since 1948, offering sausages from kielbasa to Italian to bratwurst and smoked meats, home of New England farm-made sausage, open 7 days, pekarskys.com. And Field Goods, working with farmers to deliver weekly produce year-round to workplaces and community locations such as local libraries. Field Goods supports small farms and healthy eating. Field-goods.com. Thanks again to Rob Handel for being here today. Thank you for listening and for all the great calls. Our engineer, the always pickled Zach Malloy. Barb King took your calls. Our producer, not here today, but listening, I'm sure, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely weekend. Alan will be in the big chair on Monday at 2 for a Medical Monday. Stand by for news.